This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same. It's 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up at 11:33, Dr. Laura Hanks will be here for public cervix announcement. There is a case before the Supreme Court that started this morning regarding trans care and trans care for kids. I believe this is the state of Tennessee. And Dr. Hanks has worked with the trans community and has, I'm sure, opinions about this.
I'm very nervous about the Supreme Court taking up this topic.
Yes. And from some of the dialogue I've seen so far this morning, it seems like Samuel Alito is pretty much coming out not necessarily hearing both sides, shall we say.
Oh, so he's already told us what he's going to do, huh?
It seems like he's pretty firmly siding with the state of Tennessee and against trans care. So what a shock. I know, but...
I don't want to say against the law, but aren't you just not supposed to do that?
When you're a Supreme Court justice, I would have thought.
Yeah.
But these are different days now.
Apparently. I mean, honestly, like, I don't even know... That makes me really mad because after that's done. Because what are you going to, like, you just have to wait until they're gone to try to bring it back around.
Well, and now again, you know, Donald Trump's going to have the opportunity to replace.
Oh, yeah. He's going to get at least one more.
Yeah. Two. So we will keep you updated on that, but we'll talk about that with Dr. Hanks coming up at 11:33. And if you have questions about trans care, I highly encourage you to send them in.
Please.
She will absolutely answer them. If you have a question about trans care and how this works, send it in to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says, at civicmedia.us. I'm sure she would have no problem answering any questions you might have.
And we will. And please let us know if this is a private matter. We will get the information to her directly and try to set up a pipeline between the two of you.
Yes.
This is not something we have to put on the air if you don't want it.
Absolutely.
But we can definitely be a conduit if we can help.
Absolutely. All right. We are very excited to be joined by our guest taking time out while he is on vacation.
That's right.
He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Darren Van Ruden joins us on the phone. Good morning, Darren. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I am doing well.
Thank you so much for joining us as you're taking a little time off. We really appreciate it. But we did want to, you're going to be joining us once a month now, Darren, and I'm very excited about that. We really want to learn and appreciate and give shout outs to our farmers because it's such an important part of the Wisconsin economy. And you are obviously in the middle of it. You're the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. So let's talk first and foremost about the state convention that's coming up in just a couple of weeks. What will you be anticipating is going to happen at that convention, December 13th through the 15th?
Yeah, so our convention, is December 13th through the 15th. Going to be at the Chula Vista Resorts in Wisconsin Dells, and it's the time of year that our members all get together and talk about the policy issues that they want to face for the next year. So that's a little bit longer process too. We usually start that in September already, where the counties and the locals get together and talk about the issues that they want to see talked about, and then the first part of November, our county presidents get together for a day-long meeting to go over the policy book that's been recommended by the policy review committee. And then ultimately it ends up at our state convention here coming up in a couple weeks, where that'll be setting the directives of the organization for the next year. So, this year we've got quite a few issues that are kind of got discussed quite a bit. One of them was wolves. Another one is digesters. And then for quite a few years now, water has been an issue. And of course, over the past couple of years now, the PFAS situation has added to that list of concerns on water quality, and then quantity too has been an issue over the years. So we've got pretty good line of things to talk about. We also do a few educational sessions in the morning and afternoon on Saturday. In the morning, we're going to be talking about the seed industry and some of the corporate monopolies there that are really controlling a lot of that, and how there's getting to be fewer and fewer choices for our farmers to actually look at seed varieties to buy. One thing that's kind of a positive there within our organization is we do have a few members that are starting some smaller seed cooperatives and trying to make sure that seed varieties are available and have many varieties available too. And then also Saturday morning, looking at, owning your land and what that looks like. And, as we're getting to, it seems like more parcels of land are becoming under control of fewer and fewer people. Can we make that land more diversely owned and how that might look too? In the afternoon, we got a session on what farming might look like over the next half a dozen years or so, and especially with the change in administration again and some of the things that came out during the election process, there's that concern on what could be happening. So overall, I think we've got a lot of interesting topics, but certainly looking forward to the discussion of our members on our policy and what the direction is going to look like for 2025.
Boy, you guys, you're covering a lot.
Yeah.
that's a lot of stuff. Is wolf predation a big problem, Darren, for Wisconsin farmers?
Yeah, especially our most northern members up there. We have some members that have seen 15 to 20% of their calves lost in a spring during calving season and due to wolves. And we have, another member up there too that's put 8-foot fence all the way around their whole farm to keep wolves out. And, that could be something that could actually make the farm go bankrupt too, because that's not cheap to put that fence up.
No doubt.
But yet, when you look at what you're losing on calves, that's your future too. So, we really need to look at something. Because we got members that are very strong on both sides there, certainly the ones that are losing animals for predation, but then also those that don't want any wolves killed at all. So, we have to try to figure out what that medium can look like, or if there's, programs that could be made available to farmers to have that protection and keep the, wolf population safe and growing, or else, make sure that we've got something that farmers can continue to make a living on.
Darren, another thing you brought up was PFAS, and we've talked about that a lot, both on the show and as a network, the importance of getting that under control. What do you assume or predict the talks about that topic will be at the convention this month?
Yeah, I certainly think it's going to be one of our special orders of business. It's more looking at how do we make sure that the farm community is not become the target of everybody as the problem. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's situations out there where it could be that, but how do we get to a solution of making sure that number one, we can control or eliminate future bites that are going to be there. But also making sure that everybody's responsible about their actions and doing what they can to help clean up the problem. And so does that include, state and federal programs that would have dollars made available for sites that have been contaminated and can be cleaned up or at least controlled? So lots of different options out there. What our members will come up with, I'm sure, will be a soup full of different ideas.
It'll be an interesting stew.
That's for sure.
If you're just joining us, Darren Von Ruden is our guest. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and he's going to be joining us once a month going forward as we head into 2025. You had mentioned seed monopolies, Darren, and I had never thought about that. I certainly know that that's a problem within animal processing, because that seems to be pretty much controlled by one or two companies. I never anticipated that But it makes perfect sense that there's seed monopolies. That's just got to be crushing for farmers.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and as that process is continuing to grow, it's getting to be where the chemical companies and the seed companies are have the same owners. So if you buy one particular seed brand, then you almost have to buy the chemicals from the chemical company that seed company owns, or that ownership can be vice versa, not necessarily seed company owning chemicals. The chemicals might own the seed company. And, you know, back 30 years ago, there was 8 to 15 major players in the seed industry. Today, we're down to about 3.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
The majority are worldwide seed sellers, too. So it's not just that they're here in the U.S. They're really worldwide. And so having that diversity and options for farmers to buy different seeds is really becoming a bigger issue. So that's why it's, you know, quite exciting that we've got a few members that are forming seed cooperatives that are starting, you know, on smaller grains versus the larger commodities. But, you know, if we can break into that market, you know, can we get back into making the seed and soybean industry a little bit more diverse too?
That's so interesting. I just, how do you even begin to start a seed cooperative?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's a process you know, first you got to get some folks that are interested in that process. And then, you know, the dollars is really the biggest thing there.
Sure.
You match some funds that you can have storage space. And then all the, so the seed production process does cost quite a bit. Just the equipment alone to put seed in the ground can be quite expensive. But then, you know, having the varieties that are going to be matched up for the different soil types and all the different weather events that happen, you know, that's a challenge in itself. But certainly, you know, certain individuals and groups have put time and effort and committed to making sure that they can work that process along. And then just having the diversity helps, you know, especially local areas where these seed co-ops are at. Seems to be, you know, an interest of the local farmers to keep things expanding and diversifying.
Darren, we got a break coming up. We will be right back. We're going to talk about the ever-languishing farm bill and see where that is. Darren Van Ruden is our guest, the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Keep it right here. This is Matt Nair on air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Darren Van Ruden, is on the phone with us. And right before the break, Darren, we were talking about these seed company monopolies, and I just want to reiterate, monopolies are only good for, I don't know, those corporations and their shareholders. It sure doesn't seem like the monopolies do the rest of us much good.
Yeah, you know, and there's studies out there that show that too, is, you know, the fewer folks that are involved in any cycle of any business really just makes it harder for the you know, in our situation, the farmers, the producers, to not only buy product, but also sell it too. And when you have a diverse economic situation out there, which is that business model. It seems to be the competition keeps everybody from the consumer back to the farmer. I'm somewhat happy, but when you do have that monopoly issue, it's basically one or two winners and the rest of us are left holding the basket.
Yeah, definitely. It's unfortunate. We were talking also about the state convention that's coming up December 13th through the 15th. That's going to happen in Wisconsin Dells. And I'm sure you're hearing a lot about the Farm Bill, which is still languishing. What's the discussion you're hearing about that, Darren?
Yeah, so certainly what's happening in D.C. right now with the administration change and looking at the new Secretary of Agriculture, looking at that process, who thinks they want to get the Farm Bill passed because they don't have to worry about the next election cycle, and those that do, it's looking more and more like there's probably just going to be an extension to the current Farm Bill. Right now we actually don't have a Farm Bill. It expired back in September 30th, and we're sitting there really with nothing, but things really don't kick in until January 1 of 2025 if we don't get an extension here, in the next 10 days of legislative session that's happening in D.C. And, and all things are pointing to right now, the House and the Senate's versions are too far apart, and they don't have enough hours in a day to get it together and get something in front of the president. So that means an extension that'll most likely happen, and then we'll deal with it next year. And of course, next year is an off election year, so nobody wants to spend any money at all on those years, which is not a good thing for the Farm Bill, because that means cuts instead of keeping the programs that we currently have.
Well, and explain what this would mean if this extension would not even get kicked, if they wouldn't get that done. That would have some devastating consequences for Wisconsin's farmers.
Yeah, well, it might actually help in one aspect, because it would go back to the original laws, Farm Bill law that was put in place back in 1937. And it would mean that farmers would have to be paid parity prices. And so that would have a devastating effect on the consumers, because, right now farmers generally are receiving 20 to 25% of the parity price. So, for instance, dairy milk, a gallon of milk that we're currently getting at $3 a gallon, or maybe $4, depending on what part of the state you live in, you could see a doubling or a tripling of that price if the Farm Bill didn't get signed. Because at that point, then the farm economy, certainly we'd see that influx coming here, but that has to come from someplace. So how can we, continue that process that way? We really need to make sure that the Farm Bill is there so that, number one, farmers have protection, but number two, consumers have protection too. And without it, we're really both in trouble, because people simply won't be able to afford to eat food, and then we'll have, mass overproduction, really. And then you lose more farmers than you currently do, because all of a sudden the processors and the distributors can't afford to buy our product, and then it's sits in the bulk tanks or sits in the storage sheds.
And this is one of the reasons why, Darren, we want to have you on the show on a regular basis. Things like this, when people hear Farmers Bill, the Farm Bill, they might not think, well, that's farmers. What does that have to do with me? This has everything to do with everyone. It includes farmers, the consumers, the people. This affects us all if this overdue by a year bill is not passed. So we just really thank you for being on the show and talking to us about these things.
Absolutely. Because again, if a gallon of milk would go up to $8 a gallon, the shrieking would never stop. And unfortunately, they're going to come and they're going to be shrieking at our dairy farmers, not the people in Washington who didn't get their job done. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's always easiest to point the finger at the person at the bottom, and instead of holding people accountable for their actions that have put the farming industry, in the bad spotlight, which, farmers generally want to make sure that we provide safe, adequate food supply for everybody out there. And I talked to a lot of farmers that would just love to work for basically nothing if they could, have that time off and have a few of the other fun activities that are going on out there. But of course, capitalism requires us to make money. So that means that we have to charge for the products that we produce. But overwhelmingly, there's a lot of farmers that just really love what they do and would do it on a regular basis without any complaints. But when you can't have any of the fun things too once in a while, that's where the economic system we're in is really causing the hardships that we're seeing.
Absolutely. Darren Von Ruden is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thank you so much for taking that some time out for us, Darren. We will talk to you next month. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you too, and look forward to next month.
Thanks, Darren.
See you in December, Darren. News is coming up next. When we return, Dr. Laura Hanks will be here for public cervix announcement. Keep it here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com. And by the way, I'm going out tonight.
Best believe I'm still bejeweled. When I walk in the room, I can still make the whole place. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Sweet Gail B on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. She joins us every Wednesday at this time for public cervix announcement, but we talk all things health. So if you ever have a question for her, please email that to Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Dr. Laura Hanks is here. Good morning, Dr. Hanks. How are you? I like the Christmas tree in the background.
Good morning. We're crazy about Christmas here. That's actually our that's our bird tree. It only has bird ornaments.
Oh, because your husband works with birds.
Yeah.
I will leave. Okay, guys, everywhere. I'm out of here on this one. Sorry, birds are being talked about. I'm out.
We know how I love birds. That's cool.
Yeah.
I love that he gets his own bird tree. Everyone should have a tree of their own. Absolutely. One of the reasons I was looking forward to talking to you today, because this is a group of people that you work with. You work within the trans community, and the U.S. Supreme Court's hearing oral arguments today in a major case over transgender health care for minors. This is focusing on Tennessee's ban on the treatment for minors in their state. Justice Samuel Alito asking lawyers representing the families who are challenging this ban, wouldn't this lead to endless litigation based on determinations by lay judges regarding complicated medical issues? Well, you guys did that with the abortion issue. I don't know what Alito was talking
about.
Is
he talking about the Chevron doctrine being taken away so the judges make the decisions instead of specialists?
Yeah, no, he didn't mention that, but I find that interesting. But the Tennessee's whole point, apparently, Tennessee Solicitor General Matthew Rice says the law makes a reference to a minor appreciating their sex as a recognition that some people regret the treatments. So I would like you to talk about regret. people who do go through perhaps hormone blockers and things like that, because that's, first of all, it starts with counseling. I want to make that clear, right? If your child comes to you and they're in fourth grade and says, I have questions, you don't take them to the doctor and say, we need surgery. It starts with counseling, correct?
Exactly. Always with counseling. And there's so many conversations around this. And we've talked about that before, that this is like many, many conversations with multiple providers, social work, your primary care, maybe an OBGYN, you know, so you're having, you know, this conversation several times before any medical treatment and especially surgical treatment. So I was listening for the last 2 hours, I've been listening to the arguments and like screaming at my screen.
I'm sure.
That is wrong. Like,
the thing that like really, and to be clear, there is, I will say there is still a paucity of a lot of data with when it comes to transgender care, especially with minors. So I'll give you that like there's still lots of research that needs to be done. However, what really was grinding my gears was that they kept saying in the arguments, the lawyer, whoever it was that was talking to the judges, kept saying testosterone is irreversible. If you give a little girl testosterone, it's irreversible. And that is something that we just don't know yet. And there's there are a few papers out there. Some say that patients that have ovaries that have been on long-term testosterone and then gone off it have had the same successful egg retrieval as people that have not been on testosterone. So that's a paper that came out in 2020 that said that. And in 2021, there was another paper that said the opposite, that if people have on long-term testosterone had poorer egg retrieval, more DNA damage and things like that. So that is a question.
It's an open question.
To just blanket statement. Yep. To say that to the judge, like it's irreversible. He kept saying it causes infertility. It causes infertility. And that's like the biggest thing that I see, is that, patients, think if they're on testosterone, they also, and they're having intercourse with someone that could be get them pregnant, they need to be on a birth control too, because testosterone is not 100% causes infertility. Like that's like,
sure,
we know
sure.
that. So like, you can still potentially ovulate or have menstrual bleeding if you have a uterus and ovaries. So, when he kept saying infertility, that was just driving me nuts. So again, not only is there not a lot of data in this area, there's a lot of cherry picking of data in these arguments that's happening. And like the CAST review is one that gets brought up a lot and has a lot of misinformation in it. And so they went into that a little bit about like, well, you picked this study, you know, like, so, but they don't get into the weeds as much as we do, which is a little bit frustrating to say the least.
I'm sure. So when we talk about people who regret having had this treatment, do we have any numbers on this specifically?
Yeah. And that's a great question. Sorry, I kind of went off on my own tangent.
Tangent away. No problem.
I wanted to be a politician once. So let me answer the question I wanted you to ask.
No, you'd be terrible at it, doctor, because you'd be like, no, you're wrong and stupid. And then you never get elected.
She's out. Another one that I think that there's numbers, but that is such a moving target, because there are some people that, and again, the language around this is people don't really like the word detransition. I like the word gender journey, because I think that at different times in your life, you are going to experience feeling different genders. Like I think when I was growing up, I was very much a tomboy. Like I, you know, in the 90s, that's what you call it, what you said. It was
right.
Your tomboy. I never wanted to wear skirts. I only wanted to wear pants and ties. I never thought of myself as a male, but I was very much like not feminine. And
you
and
weren't
now
a girly
I feel
girl.
Like I love wearing my, well, now I'm like sparkles everywhere, like high heel. Like I love it, you know? So I think that it's a journey. And I think that if we all kind of reflect on how we feel at different times in our lives and who we're around in the environment, it's gonna change. So I think that it's a little unfair to say, like, what is the exact percentage of people that, quote, detransition or regret their decision? There is really interesting data that came out. There's a U.S. trans survey that people can look up. You literally, it's called the U.S. trans survey. They did it in 2015, and then they did it again in 2022. They had an open online survey to anyone that identified as non-binary or trans to fill out. And they got 92,000 responses.
Wow.
Which is, so that's like a good, you know,
sample.
Again, there's the part that it's online. And so there's, you know, recall button and stuff like that. But still, that's a good N, right? So in that, people, let's pull up. I sent these stats to Jane earlier. Sorry, everyone. I don't have every stat memorized, believe it or not.
Shocking.
I know. Doctors aren't perfect either. So when they asked people about their life satisfaction with receiving hormone treatment, 84% said they were a lot satisfied and 14% said a little more satisfied. So only one or less than 1% said they were not satisfied. So I would, you know, kind of say from that people that they, so that can, you know, vary. Does that mean that they were detransitioning or didn't actually feel it fit their gender, or they just weren't happy with the effects that they got from there? At any rate, I would put that number around like 1% from that. But I think that that's like really huge to know, like people that get hormone therapy to help them associate with the gender that they feel that they are overall 84 plus 14% satisfied, you know, like that's huge. And you know, they talked a little bit in the Supreme Court. Another thing that was driving me nuts is like the risk of suicide. And they talked about how transgender people do have a higher rate of suicide. We know that. But once they receive medical treatment or surgical treatment, their chance of suicide, of going through with suicide, is much lower. So the chance of suicidality is still there, but the chance of actually going through with it is much lower if they're receiving these treatments. So again, you can very much like those nuances, you can say, oh, well, the suicide rate is the same or it goes up or something like that. And it's like, no, because that population, because they have a harder life because of the arguments that they have to fight for this right? That they're, you know, going to have harder mental health or have issues with mental health. So, you know, again, that's just one way that you can see how they can, you know, the other side can kind of like pick and choose.
Well, and sometimes it's a sin of omission. We just don't mention the parts of the studies that we don't like that contradict our point. Correct.
One of the things, doctor, I think about, like, you know, not having all the stats in front of us, the fact that the sheer number of people who identify in this country as trans is very small. It's like a percent and a half.
Exactly.
So you take that percent and a half and you say, how many of those individuals, I don't even like using the word regret because I feel like they've weaponized the word regret. Eric Hovde did that in his speeches. They're weaponizing that word regret to say, well, you see, we were right. All these kids who were who are trans and now can't go back. It's like, well, you're talking about a percentage of a small percentage that you're not even correct about because you don't really care about these kids that you're using as an example, but like, I want to use a kind of almost more a violent term. Like, you're using them as a weapon, as a target. And so like, if someone ever says to you like, well, all these trans people, well, how many people do you think are trans in this country? Like a percent. And when you talk about detransitioning, I love what you say about gender journey. It's an even smaller number than that.
Exactly. I think that it is actually 0.6% identify as transgender. I'm pretty sure.
Really? Okay.
You might need to fact check me on that. In the U.S. Something the one time I did clap when I was listening to the arguments, Justice Sotomayor was pointed out that exactly. She's like, okay, so we're talking about a less than 1% of the population. And the argument had been, well, you know, it'll go to the democratic process, you know, if it gets to that too, in order for them to get the medication. She was like, I find it really hard to believe that the democratic process is going to be fair to a part of the population that's less than 1%. And I was like, Queen. Yeah, that's the whole problem.
And I might be wrong about this, Dr. Hinks, but I saw something in the last couple of days that some of these treatments that they use for trans people are applicable in other health applications. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Some of the medications that people take in order to help their transition are also applied in other applications. Not just for transitioning.
Yeah, so that was a lot of this conversation is when is it appropriate to give someone testosterone? So, you know, a little, a boy that doesn't, you know, is going through or is not going through puberty or like wants chest hair. And I actually sat on a panel once where, and not to like stereotype, but there was this old white guy in the back and he was kind of making me nervous. And he, you know, it was all about trans care. And he raised his hand. I was like, uh-oh. And he goes, well, I'm just confused because I'm a primary physician and I prescribe hair growth treatment for balding men. Isn't that gender affirming care? And I was like, slow clap for the old white guy. Like,
looking at you, Elon Musk.
So he was just like, what's the conversation? And I was like, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Dr. Laura Hinks joins us every Wednesday at 11:33 for public cervix announcement. If you ever have a question for the doctor regarding anything, send it in to janesays@civicmedia.us. Thank you so much, Dr. Hinks. We'll see you next Wednesday. Stay with us. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Remains of the Day edition. Might not be what you're expecting. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Putz de Leon continues to actively ruin. Just a reminder, if you haven't yet, download the Civic Media app. It is absolutely free. You can call and text directly to all of the shows all across the network, no matter where you are in the state. We also have Badger games that you can listen on the app, and it's absolutely free. So also, go get the app.
You can customize it, too, for the things you want, sports, weather, news, all those things.
Sign up for newsletters.
It's wonderful.
It is pretty wonderful. And there's going to be a app-specific contest coming very soon. So people can win wonderful and fabulous prizes that could but probably won't change the course of your entire life.
Can you count on that? Absolutely.
Absolutely, Greg Bach. All right, it's 11:53, Calvin. That means it is time for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it into Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This one I found on insidethemagic.net. I don't even know what this is.
This sounds credible.
But it was posted by Eva Miller.
Yep.
Giving credit to Disney for the photo on there. Headline reads, Haunted Mansion Shut Down After Guest Disposes of Human Remains. In a bizarre and concerning incident at Walt Disney World Resort, the Haunted Mansion ride on November 30th had to be temporarily closed and evacuated after a guest tried to scatter human ashes during the ride. The act, which has been confirmed as a recurring issue in theme parks, resulted in significant disruption for guests and immediate response from park staff.
Folks, by the way, really quick here. Anytime, if you're listening, whether you're listening on the live stream, when you hear this noise, that's Jane being very upset.
That's my mouse.
That's just like...
The report shared by a park guest describes the selfishness of the act, emphasizing repercussions for both staff and the remains themselves.
This quote, is the best.
Quote, as I write this, Haunted Mansion is down and being evacuated due to someone spreading human ashes on the ride. Aside from the selfishness of the act, your loved one's ashes are going to be vacuumed up into a bucket with mouse droppings and other detritus and thrown in the garbage.
But Jane, magic mouse droppings. They're cartoon mice.
I can't think of a more ignominious end to someone that I cared for. Plus, if we can identify who did it, after all, there are cameras all throughout that park.
Yes.
You're probably going to be banned from attending all Disney property. In other words, please don't do this. Yeah, don't do that. Scattering human ashes in public places, including Disney, is not only against park rules, but also illegal in many jurisdictions without proper authorization. This also raises questions about respect and common courtesy.
No one wants to stamp up. I don't want to step on Aunt Rosie's ashes. I would feel so bad.
Can you imagine going and then all of a sudden you get a big pfft in your face?
Yeah.
And that was Uncle Wilbur.
What was that? What was that? Oh, he loved this ride.
people.
Can we just go? And honestly, if I thought about this beforehand, I would have gotten some dramatic music. The letter is so good because they use words like detritus and ignominious.
Ignominious is a good word.
I mean, someone went to community college probably. It's amazing. I love this letter so much.
Amazingly, this is not an isolated incident.
Narp.
People trying to scatter ashes in Disney parks, fairly common. Popular attractions like the Haunted Mansion often attract those who wish to leave a part of their loved ones in a place they cherished while they're alive. But this can cause significant operational disruptions, pose health concerns, and ultimately result in the remains of Uncle Wilbur being disposed of in an undignified manner. Disney parks, says this article, are cherished for making memories. They're not equipped to serve as a final resting place.
I am really surprised at this point that Disney doesn't have a service where they're like, did they love coming here?
That would be a huge moneymaker for
them. Maybe not involving the ashes, or maybe involving the ashes where they have a specific area. You could have a little ceremony.
In memoriam.
In memoriam, you can dash them over. You can dash them over of some flowers as a fertilizer. But
see, you'd have to pay for that.
You think that people wouldn't pay $500
no,
for that service?
Because that's why they're doing it on the Haunted Mansion ride, because they don't want to have to pay for an internment.
What was your favorite ride? It was the Tower of Terror. Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. That's today's round of...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Really shouldn't be. Coming up on the show tomorrow, we will have J.R. Radcliffe will be here to talk all things sports, weather and wine with Brittany Merlot and much, much more. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. Thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today, just a little, and you have the chance to share it. Stay tuned for news coming up next, followed by Todd Alba, Maggie Dawn, Dom Salvia, and Pete Schwabba. Stay with us. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.